Final hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. At 1 o'clock on Wednesdays, we talk with Chris Mason. C. Mace is on the line with us. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Oh, I like it. I like the enthusiasm. What is fantastic in your world these days?
It's just an acceptance of where things are. My teaching situation's improving. I got to help on a project this morning that was a great success. So I'm flying high right now.
Wow. All right.
Yeah.
And what was the project? Can you divulge that info or no?
It was actually, it's kind of my wheelhouse, which is I love to do this, and it's inspiring me to do to want to do more stuff with our social media. But my oldest had a drama project where she had to showed the bad etiquette at a theater. So she did a little skit of her theater, and I helped her edit it a little bit and put in a couple sound effects. But she acted it out, and then I just put in a couple sound effects and put a title on it and everything like that. So yeah, that was it.
She was happy with it.
Yeah,
outstanding.
So I got her approval. Yeah.
All right.
So I'm Jack.
It doesn't look like Marc-Andre Fleury is jacked these days. What do you think is going through his mind right now watching Leonard get the starts for Vegas?
You know, this is a guy, he's been in this situation before. I mean, if you remember the year that the Preds met them in 2017, he was the guy, you know, that got him to that point in the playoffs, and then they ended up going back to Matt Murray. And, you know, it was no fault of his. I thought he played excellent in that playoff run, and that was a controversial decision, and then ended up obviously working out for the Penguins. But it's tough. It's like anybody. It's probably the same way that Pekka felt on the bench in the Arizona series. You know, you accept that maybe the game that this guy's going to start and you're going to be ready for when you get your opportunity, your name called. And for Pekka, he never got his name called, which is, you know, very unfortunate. And it's not easy. And same with Marc-Andre Fleury. You know, Robin Leonard was the guy that they decided to go to. And, you know, he pitched a shutout that first game after Marc-Andre Fleury's agent, Alan Walsh, put out that controversial picture of Marc-Andre Fleury with a sword through his back.
What was he thinking with that? Do you know Alan Walsh at all? Or do you know people that are represented by him? That seems so out of left field. I've never seen an agent do anything close to that.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And that's really, you know, that's kind of putting, it feels like me, I know you want to stick up for your players, but putting your own ego ahead of your players' needs and what's best for him. I mean, that'd be embarrassing. I mean, I'm sure the guys probably laughed it off, and that's just the way that hockey is, you know, to your teammates and stuff like that. But it puts Marc-Andre Fleury, and it puts, it's a kind of a selfish thing to do because it's a distraction for the team. For Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, he's got to answer all these questions about it. And at the end of the day, to your point, D-Mac, is the guy just wants to play, and he just wants to be ready for, you know, they still got a lot of hockey left, and the way that they're playing, you know, they could be doing some damage here. So they're probably going to need him, and his mindset is probably get back and just be ready for when he gets an opportunity. But, yeah, it sucks. There's just a lot of distraction going on around Marc-Andre Fleury right now.
What's your best guess? And I know it's just a guess, but you know the lay of the land a little bit better than us. So, what's your best guess on why this is happening? You know, why is Leonard the one getting the starts? I mean, he's a guy who just got traded at the deadline.
Yeah, well, I just think now the NHL is, you got to win now. So if you've seen the way a guy has played, and I think last round you look at I think Leonard was the better goalie. Maybe they just have a feeling about a guy, and that's the guy that's going to get it done. If you look at Robin Leonard the last 3 years, he's been a top five goalie and statistically in three different teams, three different systems. The guy's been just getting it done, and Marc-Andre Fleury's been good. You know, he's got a history of inconsistency. But having said that, this is a guy that's been there before, and he's won Stanley Cups, and he's got the experience. He's the ultimate teammate, you know. But that's the thing with the goalie position, is it's tough. You may have two deserving guys and candidates to play on any given night, but you can only pick one. And I don't know the reason behind picking Leonard. Other than if you look at St. Louis too, to me, it's probably to everybody, it's a no brainer to pick Jordan Binnington. Well, he wasn't playing good, you know, in the previous round, and he didn't look good. So they went with Jake Allen. And I thought he played well. And, you know, in their deciding game, they decided to go back to Jordan Binnington, just because of probably what he did last year. And he hadn't been playing well, but it was just such a, you know, it's such an easy decision, I guess, or for a coach to say that, hey, you know, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down with our best guy, even though he's not playing well. So maybe this is a feeling that they have or something they've seen in practices and they've addressed and they've seen during the games that Robin Leonard's the guy right now. But it's not to say in next game or two games from now, it won't be Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Predators have loaned the services of Elli Tolvanen back to his KHL team. What do you think they want him to accomplish the next couple of months before camp?
Just to play, build your game, work on it. Now, you know, you're going to be back playing with men again, and just to continue to play, get the reps, you know, take what you've learned over here in North America, you know, understand what you need to do to play at the National Hockey League level, what they've been working on him with over the last couple of years, and he's been very open to. And anybody you talk to Scott Nickel, you talk to Jeff Kelty, David Poile, anybody that's watched the development of Elli Tolvanen, he's always had those offensive gifted skills. But when you play over here in North America opposed to international hockey, it's a lot harder to get those opportunities to use them, to be able to use your skill in that way. It starts really with defense and playing the right way on the other side of the puck to get the puck back and to be in the right position for your teammates to be able to get those opportunities. So he's really been working hard on that. So I think the more that he has an opportunity to play with that level of intelligence and detail, attention to detail in his game, I think is just going to be good for him. He's a young player. And then like anybody, if he's playing right now, everyone else is going to be off. If he's playing right now and he comes back and then they start training camp, well, he's going to be a step ahead of everybody. He's going to be running when everybody is just, you know, just walking and jogging, trying to catch up. So he'll kind of have a running head start there. So I just think as a young player, the more opportunity that you can get to play and to work on your game is the better. And I think that's a guy that they're going to give a serious, they've already said it. They're going to give him a really good look, and he's going to have an opportunity to make this team. So I think if I'm him, this is exactly what I want to be doing.
It's clear that the Predators endorsed this. They encouraged him to do this, Mace. You've played, obviously, a long time in North America. You've also played your share on the international ice surface. I know one of the things that they've worked with is try to break him of some of the habits that happen as a result of just the way the game is approached on the bigger surface. Some of the things you can do, as you just sort of illustrated. Would you be a little concerned that you, I mean, can you, as somebody that went back and forth some, can you readjust now that he's gone through it more and has more reps on North American soil and that size and that type of hockey, or would you worry about some regression there?
I wouldn't worry about the regression, to be honest, because once you know, you know. And I think before it was a matter of, you know, Tolvanen and not knowing what the game was like over here, never having done it, you know, never having played against, you know, the dimensions of a North American rink and the style of hockey and the physicality of it. I just think it was all new to him, so he didn't have any experience to draw on. He didn't know where he was supposed to be. It's a different game, and a lot of people think over in North America and the KHL that just because you have a bigger ice surface, you have more room and it's more free-flowing. Well, in actuality, it's not. You do have a lot more room on the outsides of the arena or the rink to maybe get your skating going, and you know, it's not as much stops and starts because a lot of teams are so defensive, they're going to just come back in the middle of the ice, and they're going to – it's so – there's so much distance from the boards to the net that you do have a lot of area outside. So defense is a little easier because it's your back a little more and a little more stationary in the middle of the ice opposed to North America, where it's just you're constantly skating and you constantly have to be aware of where your teammates. And I guess it's similar in a certain sense in that you always have to be aware your teammates are. But I think the fact that he has the experience now, it won't be an issue because I think he'll be able to adjust. The older you get, the more of a student of the game you become. and he's had some unbelievable coaching in Milwaukee, you know, in Nashville when he's there, just to understand the details of the game. And I think that, to me, it's not an issue. To me, now it's just a you know, him being ready and growing as a player. And I think the only way you can grow is to continue to play. So I think this is a great move, and that's obviously why, you know, the Preds are really supporting it as well.
Important guy in the Predators' plans for sure, with the way the things look. Mace, if you watched any of the Predators Canucks games, you probably didn't know a lot about Jacob Markstrom coming in, but some of the most bizarre games the Predators played were against the Canucks. Nothing went the Predators' way. There were a couple of games where the Predators really had tons of quality scoring chances but couldn't score. And we all sort of made a note. Markstrom had a really good year. He's continued that on now in the playoffs. Last night was a good example. If you look at the final score, it looks like a lopsided win for the Canucks. But in reality, the Vegas Golden Knights had lots of chances to get back in the game. Markstrom was really, really good. This is a guy that's about to make a lot of money.
Well, you know what? It's funny because I just feel like what we were just talking about, Ellie Tolvanen, is very similar to a guy like Markstrom. Is a guy that came into the league. He was a big, you know, talented guy, but I just don't think he had an understanding of how to use his size and how to play. And when he first came in the league, he was trying to be so reactionary and, you know, the big athletic guy that was all over the place and just really inconsistent. But I feel he's really grown in to finding a style that suits him. It's more of a less is more type of style. He's given himself more opportunities to make that second save instead of, you know, we saw Pekka early in his career too. He'd sprawl across the net to make that first save, and then he'd have to sprawl across it and make a second save, and it would look just, you know, unbelievable. You're like, oh my God, this guy's just, look at these saves. But when you are able to control your positioning and your movements, you make the game look easier. And when you have a frame like Markstrom and you have the athleticism like Markstrom, you make the game look a lot easier, and you put yourself in positions to have success a lot, and it leads to consistency and confidence and just belief in what you're doing, and you have an understanding of what you need to do as a player. Everyone's different. Everyone has their own way, and when you're young, you have to find out, you know, this works for me, this doesn't work for me, this works, this doesn't. You have different goaltending coaches, and you try different off-season training regimens and all these different types of things. And I think Markstrom's at that point in his career where he's figured it out. He knows he's found a formula that's worked for him. He's found a team that believes in him, and that's given him an opportunity that he's earned. And I just think you're seeing the evolution of a guy that's just full of confidence and just found the way, his recipe for success. And he has, Will, you're right. Like, with some of those games, they had no business being in the hockey game if it weren't for him. And that's, you know, as part of the frustration of the Predators' year, and maybe games against Vancouver the last couple of years. But, you know, you got to tip your cap sometimes. And it wasn't like it was, you know, some nights you get 40 shots and they're all the perimeter, and you're like, well, we outshot them 40-20. You know, we should have won this game. It was backdoor passes, deflections, breakaways, two-on-ones, everything, you name it. And Markstrom was phenomenal. I think even some of the fans lit me up on social media for saying, oh my God, let's go look at this save. And, you know, I was going crazy for Markstrom. But it was that type of performance, especially a couple of the games this year against the Preds. But I just think he's arrived as a top guy in the league now.
And he's an unrestricted free agent. So that's and he's 29 years old. So that's going to be an intriguing one for the offseason. Let's go to the other series in the West, Mace. Two teams the Predators see a lot of, and they're going to see a lot of, so it's important to watch how this series goes down. But I keep thinking that the defensive structure of the Stars seems to be frustrating Colorado to some point. Not to say that Colorado doesn't play with structure, but they are the aggressor. They're going to use those lightning-quick guys, those speedsters. But Dallas seems to be controlling that and frustrating them to some degree. And then, obviously, Dallas is coming up with the offense that they need. That's been their question mark.
Well, you know, when you have the thing with Dallas is if they get to their game, which it seemed like it took them a little while to get to their game, and Bishop wasn't great, and you know, so they're not going to score a ton of goals most nights. They're scoring a little bit now, but once they get their game, you have a chance to beat anybody. Look at the Islanders. You know, the Islanders are a prime example of when you got that game, you can make any team just look pedestrian, especially, you know, and a team like Colorado, obviously Nathan MacKinnon is just a freak of nature, and they've got a lot of players on that team that are, you know, highly skilled offensively. Makar, you go up and down the list, Gerard, Rantanen, and all these, whoever you want to say about their team, it's one of the best up-and-coming teams in the National Hockey League, one of the best teams. But when you play that certain way, and then Colorado coming off a series like they did, into now playing a team like Dallas, it's a completely different ball game. You can't play the same way against Dallas. You have to be willing to grind it out. You have to be willing to rely on your patience a little more and to say, you know what, it's going to be a tough game. We're going to have to grind this out, and we're going to have to fight and claw for every inch, but we have to be ready for when we get an opportunity. They're not going to give you many, but we can't give them any free opportunities because that's what they're waiting for. And that's how they play. And it's a team that's really a frustrating team. And when they're able to execute their game, like they did against us last year in the playoffs, that's the way they play. If you give them any opportunities or you spend time in the penalty box and you give their power play an opportunity to get a goal here, get a goal there, that's going to be the difference in the series. So it's quite interesting. There's two polarizing styles of play with those two different teams. And in playoffs, to me, give me the one that's going to play defense every single night is the one I pick to win, even though you might have one of the best players in the National Hockey League in the world on your team who's playing probably the best he's maybe ever played. I still take the team with the defensive structure, and they're getting goaltending too. Hudobin's been he's been unbelievable.
Chris Mason is with us, Predators analyst, joins us every Wednesday at 1 o'clock here on Darren Donick and Chase. So while we're sitting here having this conversation, Chris, the NHL has put out there that they have hit the Arizona Coyotes with sanctions based on violations that they had in combine scouting of prospects. They have stripped them of a second round pick in 2020 and a first round pick in 2021. So pretty big sanctions and big losses for the Arizona Coyotes with what they admitted to of violations of rules. But those are two pretty significant draft picks for a team that knocked out the Predators in the qualifying round. We see that they're a young team. They still have some pieces that they need to put together. But what does that do to them long-term of losing those two picks?
Well, it hurts anybody. It especially hurts a team that's, you know, they look like they've got a lot of good pieces. They're, you know, couple years away from, you know, a force in the Western Conference. But that's a team that if they're not going to spend at a cap or they have to, you know, do those certain things, they rely on those prospects. Those are big pieces for any team. You always have to have those pieces in the system to really keep your organization progressing and growing and, you know, maintaining the level of consistency and success. And, you know, for the Predators, for any team, they tell you draft picks are now more important than they've ever been. The last 5, 6, 7 years, you see how the league's been getting younger and how these guys are young players are coming into the league and making impacts right away. So, you know, I guess it's a message sent to the rest of the league. Just don't do that. I mean, there's, you know, hockey is typical. I've never really heard much of that happen in hockey. I don't know if I ever have, you know, testing prospects off the book or whatever you want to call it. I've never heard of that. There's so much access to players and advisors and seeing these guys play every single night. I don't really understand why a team would do that, but I'm happy that the league came down on them. It sends a message. If anyone else gets caught, you're gonna pay a big price. These draft picks, they're like gold nowadays in currency. So I guess they got what they deserved.
Mace, as we have the conversation of what the next season is going to look like, when it's going to start, December 1st seems to be the date that everybody's focused on. But then the next part of the conversation is, okay, are they going to bubble again? Because that's worked so well. What does that look like? But let's say that they do decide to go to home rinks, and some rinks, wherever the state and local officials allow, are able to have some fans in attendance. As those discussions happen, how much of a voice should the players have with that? Because we know that they've said time and time again of how much you know, a playoff atmosphere or the Bridgestone atmosphere, how that can make a difference. Could you see players being more vocal when it comes strictly to just having fans in the stands?
I think so. I think that's, at the end of the day, that's, you play, you love the game, but part of the game that you love the most is being able to play in front of a building of your 20,000 most passionate fans, and just that atmosphere, because it's such, it just makes it that much more. And I think, you know, now obviously the league is, and the players are in a partnership, and it's all tied to revenue and, you know, making sure both sides are happy with their partnership. And then you've heard some of the guys talk about these playoff games. Yes, you know, you're responsible to get yourself motivated and to do those types of things. And, you know, you hear people say, well, you're playing a game you love, you should be able to do it. Well, you know what? The reality of it is, without the fans in the building, it's not the same. What makes our sport the best, what makes any sport the best, you know, experience is the fans, is that engagement, that level of excitement, that level of, it's just, it's what it's all about, to be able to play in front of your fans, to be able to share that experience, and just, it's just part of the whole experience of sport. Aside from the love of the game, that is the love of the game. And I think that, to me, I hope they find, you know, a way to do it safely, to do it, hopefully by then we're a lot farther along than we are now in the whole vaccine and all that kind of stuff, and the health, the CDC, and, you know, all the things are going the right way, and we can have fans. But I really do think that they'll try to find a way to get fans back, whether it's half capacity or whatever they have to do it. But I think that's got to be the end game, and I really hope they do find a way to do it.
We're with you on that, Chris. Always always enjoy the visit. Good job on the project help, and have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, guys. You too. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, that is Chris Mason, broadcast partner on television with Willie Donick on Fox Sports Tennessee, of course, former Predator goaltender, and he joins us every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. We'll come back with more. There's some news out there that we're going to pass along. Right now, I want to talk to you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD, and I've been telling you about them for years because I've been going there, and they've been helping me for years, and they can help you too, and they've already helped a lot of you here in the Middle Tennessee area. They've been around since 2007, and Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, who is the board-certified physician over there, and his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff would love to improve your quality of life, and who doesn't want that as we all get older? And right now, there's a lot of you guys out there that maybe have been feeling sluggish and haven't been feeling yourself, or just haven't had any get up to you, just haven't wanted, you know, any desire to go work out, or just feeling really sluggish. Well, you know what? They've got hormone replacement therapy. Maybe you need to get in there and let them check your levels and see if that isn't affecting your mood or your desire to get going, to get moving. You just feel like you're just not motivated. Well, they can help you in that department. They also face and body rejuvenation. Weight loss management is something that's important to them and should be important to you, and I get it. A lot of you have been out of your routine. Maybe your gym has been closed for a lot of this, or you've just, when it was closed and then when it opened back up, you just haven't had any desire to go work out. I get it. We've all been doing that the last 6 months, and maybe you've tacked on some pounds that you would like to get rid of. Well, they've got programs and people can put you and get you going in the right direction. If you need to schedule a consultation or make an appointment, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. You're going to pull into that beautiful facility in Cool Springs right off 65. You're going to let them know you're there, and they'll call you or text you and let you know when it's time for you to safely come in for your visit. If you would like to learn everything about them, it's very simple. Just go to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Don't forget, Nashville SC is back in action tonight. They're going to take on Orlando City SC at 6:30 p.m. The game will be broadcasted on 94.9, and the pregame coverage will begin at 6:15. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, good stuff as always from Chris Mason. So Nashville SC back on the pitch tonight, so check that out. I was looking at some news and notes. I'm glad you brought up the Arizona Coyotes thing. We'll get back to that in just a second. But some sad news on the Pac-12 network front. I don't know if you guys saw this, but they had a meeting this morning, and they informed 88 staff members that they were being furloughed.
Mm. I did not see that.
Pac-12 network.
But, you know, that's the byproduct of everything we've been talking about.
They have no programming.
Yeah. I mean, it's – and I'm going to say this lightly because I do believe a lot of people think about that. You know, when you have these conversations and people are quick to say, well, it's not safe. And you're right. It's a risk. And we've laid all that out. But – when I go into these conversations, I try and think, and part of it is because the business that we're in, I think the big picture, and you got to think of the trickle-down effect that, okay, if you don't play football, that's going to affect some other sports, but it's going to affect other elements outside of that, such as the Pac-12 network, and in a lot of these small towns where there's college campuses. I mean, you're going to affect business by not having, you know, college football and people coming in, so, and not having kids on campus going to class. So this virus is affecting a lot of different things, and that's another prime example.
Yep. Boy, the Arizona Coyotes just got popped, did they not?
Pretty they harsh. Did. Pretty
and
harsh.
Second round pick this year and a first round pick next year? Oof. For combine testing policy that they violated?
Well, they tried out. They were working out prospects for the draft when that was specifically prohibited during the shutdown, during the pause. You were not allowed to do that, and they defied that. And this is goes along, you know, their GM at the time, who's no longer there, John Chyka, was, you know, that happened on his watch. So that is going to put Steve Sullivan or whoever ends up being the permanent GM behind the eight ball there, because now they have no picks until the fourth round of the upcoming draft. And then they lose their first round pick in 2021. If they manage to sign Taylor Hall, they will have to give up a second round pick in that draft to the Devils, because that's part of their deal. You know, in exchange, if they grab him long term, the Devils get extra compensation. So that's trouble for a team that is not a cap team. They've got to be tight with their budget because of the issues that they have.
That's tough.
That is not good. I don't think they're keeping Taylor Hall.
No, I don't either.
Mm. Wow.
I don't know where he's going to end up. There was about a 10-minute period where I was thinking about what it would be like for it to be here, but there's too much that would have to go into that, so I've moved past that. But I don't see him staying there.
I don't see
I would agree. I don't think he ends up in Nashville, and I don't think he ends up in Arizona. I think there's much better chance he stays in Arizona.
Wasn't there at one time before he was traded from New Jersey that Edmonton was kicking the tires on bringing him back? Could that be revisited?
I don't think so. Edmonton, that's not their problem.
They'd have to have a big shakeup to pull that off money-wise.
You know, Edmonton and Toronto might want to figure out, like, it's great to have all that firepower up front and, you know, paying those guys, those forwards, a lot of money, but you might want to work on the back end, too, like, i.e. Yeah. See the Islanders, you know? Just saying.
Yeah.
Stars, Islanders, you know? Kind of
the Islanders
defensively responsible. You know?
The Islanders get their next crack at it at 2 o'clock. Let's see what they come back with after a masterful performance in game one. Big, big game. Wow. Afternoon one.
That's why when you threw that out there, Chase, when we first had this discussion, I shot it down immediately. That's not what the Predators need. Taylor Hall is not what they need. That's not fixing anything here. That's just not the direction they need to be going, and I don't believe for a minute they would even consider it. But that's not what they need. They don't need more star power more firepower. They need to get back to kind of like what David Poyle said, some of it. Get back to the Predator way. And they're going to have to fix that with the roster. But, look, the Islanders are proven. The Stars, defensive-minded, responsible. You better play defense, man. You better make sure you're getting things done on the back end as well. Because having all those nice names, pretty names up front, when it comes playoff hockey, good luck with that. Good luck with that formula.
And also, Taylor Hall, just at the stage of his career, he's going to be a pretty expensive asset. Now, you might be able to predict that maybe you could get him a little cheaper because of what the market's going to look like with the revenue issues that all sports leagues are going to have. But still, he's at a stage of his career where it's going to be a pretty heavy investment. And as you said, Darren, it's not an area where the Predators, they already have long-term investments. They've invested in the core. It takes away the flexibility that you would have in your salary cap, and you probably have to move some money around just to make it work. So there's too many things that don't line up. I get the logic of John Hines brought out the best in him, the best he's ever had in his career. But in the big picture, Taylor Hall hasn't won a whole lot. He's a dynamic player, but has some question marks in terms of that, what you're talking about, Darren, that Predator way, that tenacity, that, you know, refuse to lose kind of stuff. You know, I think there's other ways they could get that. And so I don't see it as a match.
Yeah. On a side note, you know, we talked about the Tom Brennan situation. Did you guys see where Fox Sports has replaced him for NFL games this year?
Yeah.
With Kevin, was it Kevin Kugler? Did I see that? I think that's who.
I know right, like a day after he was suspended by the Reds, the NFL came out, Fox came out and said that Tom Brennan would not be a part of their coverage this year. So that's not surprising.
Well, I was just seeing that today. That happened last week, right?
Yes.
I had not seen where the NFL or Fox on the NFL side had put that out last week. I was just kind of seeing all that hit today.
Yeah, well, I guess today's what's coming out is the report of Kevin Kugler.
Okay. So they had already said he would not be a part of their NFL coverage right away?
Yeah, that was pretty quick that they came out, which I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah.
I think that's honestly right.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with Kevin Kugler. Are you guys?
No.
Yeah, he's been on radio. He's been on Westwood One, so we've carried some of his work.
Okay.
On our air with Westwood One. He's pretty good. Pretty good, but he's been a mainly radio guy.
Interesting. I just don't know if I've probably heard him do some games. Maybe I wasn't aware of him. That's a great step forward for him.
Yeah, he's been on the Big Ten Network as well.
Yeah, I recognize the name. I couldn't tell you, exactly what games and what he's been a part of. But I mean, I definitely I know he, like you said, Chase, he's done a lot of stuff with, was it Westwood One, right?
Yeah. In fact, I think it was last year. We have tried to get him on because he did a Vandy game when they were playing a Big Ten opponent. I think it was Vandy Purdue that he was doing for the Big Ten Network, and we tried to get him on, and scheduling didn't work out. But yeah, he's good. He's solid. So I think that's a good pickup by Fox.
Has he done a lot of games with Mark Malone over the years? I remember we've had Mark Malone on. Well, it's been a while, but I remember we used to have Mark Malone on whenever we would carry the Westwood One games.
Yeah,
of games with Mark Malone. Who was a better broadcaster than he was a quarterback?
That happens.
He wasn't Terry Bradshaw, okay? He wasn't bad, though. He had his moments.
Don't ask Steelers fans about Mark Malone.
He was okay. Strong mustache. Come on.
Oh, I didn't say – wait a minute. That's a totally different subject. Look, he can hang with Tom Selleck when it comes – well, maybe not that level, but, you know, strong mustache. But quarterback-wise, he was not beloved in Pittsburgh. Let's just say that.
Speaking of broadcasting things, did you guys see that Mike Golic Jr. is going to be part of the broadcast crew for the Austin Peay game? this weekend?
No, this week, because they play on Saturday.
Yeah, Matt Berry is going to do play-by-play from ESPN, and,
okay,
and Gojo will be the color analyst.
Really?
Yep.
Well, good for him.
Saw that today.
Well, there is going to be college football. Do we know what the other – because I saw some games that are going to be played over Labor Day weekend, because I've seen some of the networks picking up the games and saying this is what we're going to show. I think I've seen like BYU, don't they play Navy and some games like that. Is Austin Peay the only one this weekend?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm trying to – I knew you were going that way, so I'm trying to get it pulled up here with the schedule, because I literally saw this earlier and then I lost the tweet. And yes. Yes. So we have on August 29th, that's this Saturday, Austin Peay, Central Arkansas. Thursday, September 3rd, Central Arkansas at UAB.
UAB and Central Arkansas, yeah. That was one of the games I saw, I think, was picked up.
Saturday, September 5th, Eastern Kentucky at Marshall. SMU at Texas State. Louisiana Monroe at Troy.
I saw Memphis and Arkansas State was also another one that was going to be picked up.
That's going to be Bob Wiskusian and Dan Orlovsky. Cole Kubelik will be a part of that broadcast as well.
MTSU and Army.
Yes, but I don't think ESPN has
No, that. No. I'm just saying that they're going to be playing Labor Day weekend.
And then Monday, September 7th, which is Labor Day, BYU at Navy. Reese Davis, Kirk Herbstreit, Allison Williams on the call.
There you go. All right. We will come back and put a bow on Wednesday's show, another fast-moving show again this week. We'll do that next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Golden days before they end. Whisper secrets to the wind.
Sad news on the restaurant side of things for our city, one that's got a lot of history in this city. And Chase, you can probably appreciate this just because you've been involved in the restaurant business with your family. Piccadilly Cafeteria on Murfreesboro Road, it's been around over 30 years in our market, is unfortunately going to serve its last meals today.
Oh, man, that is sad.
Yeah. So Piccadilly Cafeteria is just not going to, unfortunately, be able to make it.
Mm. Seeing too many of that, many stories around that. And, yeah, and to tell you, just to pull back the curtain for you, you bring up, you know, my family and our history. I have thought a lot about that lately, of what if.
Can you imagine, right, if they were in the industry right now?
You know, still doing it. You know, my dad got out at the right time, I guess, but we've talked about it, but I've thought about that a lot, of what would be going on, what it would be like. Now granted, you know, some of the things that he had were to go, and you know, Piscetti's was a to go place, so could have thrived with some of this, but it's certainly scary. And my thoughts with local business owners, especially that are going through the tough times with all this.
Something that I was going to bring up on the Vanderbilt side that we're going to get into before, this would be kind of the lead into that. I was just reading on Twitter during the break that University of Kentucky, their athletics program, they tweeted out that since the students have returned to campuses and classes, the COVID-19 testing on campus, they have tested 416 student athletes from all sports from August 7th through the 19th. They had 10 positive tests of 416 student athletes. Then they tested 259 student athletes who had just returned to campus, and they had nine positive for past. Okay, so this is returning to campus who had also went under antibody testing. And so they had 9 positive for past infections of the 259. They had 143 staff members in that same time frame of August 7th through the 19th, and they had 1 positive. So just thought I would pass that along, because Derek Mason, who I think currently is doing a Zoom call with the media.
Yeah, I think it just wrapped up in the last couple of minutes.
Up.
Yeah,
okay. He had some interesting comments that, Willie, I'll let you pass along on his Zoom call that Max Herz from our staff tweeted out.
Yeah, and maybe tomorrow on the show, because we're running low on time here, we can get Max on or somebody that took it in, because you're just, you know, we're reading the tweets from people that are covering the press conference, the various people. Max does a great job of it. I don't know. He must be a pretty fast typer because he churns these things out there. But he said, we're glad to be back. You know, we're a little rusty. Good to see the guys back on the field. We evaluated where we were, waited to take a test on Sunday, get our test results back, and just be smart about the tracing place. In this, procedurally, you want to make sure you function the right way, and we feel like we did. You know, one of the things, Darren, is you throw out what's going on in Kentucky. We've talked about in the last couple of days the story that's come out of Tuscaloosa on the Alabama campus. You know, the positive tests are just going to be routine, right? Yep. It's going to be part of the daily life on college campuses. It's what is the system in place, the procedure that you go through to control it, isolate the people that need to heal up, and then, you know, keep your fingers crossed that because younger people, especially healthy younger people, are at way less risk, that nobody ends up really getting sick and nobody ends up in the hospital. These are all important parts of dealing with the positive tests. This is an interesting quote, though, from Mason. He said, some of this was internally caused. We have to be better with our overall activities. Students coming back, everyone gets a little happy. We have to be better with our protocols and procedures. So basically saying that, hey, these are the college kids. This is what we're dealing with, right? The college kids, they haven't seen each other all summer. They've been cooped up. They get back together. And it's, you know, you got to fight the temptation. You have to have the discipline to avoid the congregations, right? Because that's how the virus spreads. We know that. He said, though, that they could have played a game had they had a game on Saturday. He said, based on the numbers that we have, we still would have been able to play. It was a handful of guys. And with that, you continue to move forward. I don't foresee this being a problem as we move forward. So hopefully you learn as you go and you get better. Hopefully everybody in that environment on the college campus learns as they go to take the proper precautions to minimize the spread, minimize the risk. And then the other thing I thought was worth bringing up, Dimitri Moore, the young man, their leading tackler from a year ago who had opted out, that opted back in. He offered a little bit of insight on that. He said it was a family situation that prompted his original decision. Dimitri lost his grandfather. He couldn't get back home for the funeral. I think that's tough. His father passed away some years ago. His grandfather was like his dad. So dealing with some, you know, obviously some family tragedy that is understandable, went through a process here, and he's decided to come back. So that's certainly good news for the team, and we certainly hope that Dimitri Moore continues on the right path here towards some good football and a good future.
I also saw where Derek Mason said, everyone has to be accountable. There is a lot for everyone in this from top to bottom.
Yep.
It's true.
Very true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a coach being honest and real on just how important this really is overall, not just to their team and their season, but I think you can infer some things there of what we've talked about of just the overall effects that a football program can have on a college campus.
Yep. I was just curious. That's, you know, it's just interesting to hear his words today speaking with the media just about, you know, some things that they're dealing with. And by the way, got an email today. I'm sure you guys did the same thing. You know, we've kind of talked about what's gone on with their staff over there, who we going to be dealing with, you know, how is this going to be moving forward. Looks like people, they're starting to obviously put, there's a football season that they plan on having. And got an email today talking about some Vanderbilt football news, kind of introducing themselves and You know, that's good, because remember we were back going, you know, a lot of good people have lost their jobs over there, but they've still got you still have to have people in place to do those jobs, and looks like they're starting to do that. So I have not met Sarah Fetters. Did you guys get that email as well?
Yeah, I got it.
So
I had not looked at it. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. So moving forward, you know, you still got to have those people in place. So it'll be interesting to see.
It's an important job. It's an important job.
No doubt about it.
Especially now. With
I was going to say, especially now in these times and you know, what we're talking about. So,
Guys, one thing we haven't mentioned, I know we're running low on time, is we kind of toss out a few things that we haven't covered here. This is an interesting one, and Mark Schlabaugh has come out with the story. The NCAA has said that LSU men's basketball coach Will Wade either arranged for or offered impermissible payments to at least 11 potential recruits and others around them, according to documents obtained Wednesday by ESPN via Mark Schlabaugh. So this looks like it's even on top of all the other hot water he was in before. I'll have to read more on this, but not good for Will Wade, who is already sort of on double secret probation.
Who knows what this means? Whatever. I believe.
I mean, if there's a guy that has nine lives, it's Will Wade.
Oh,
but
my gosh.
This
19.
This isn't good, though.
But none of this stuff was good.
I was gonna say, we've been saying this for how long? I mean,
what's been good?
Hey,
in all
still
of this?
Their coach.
Somebody finally got Patino, and even he's got a job now, I guess, after all those years. But, I mean, can he honestly continue Will Wade at LSU with all this?
Yes.
You think so?
Yes. Just because none of us thought
he'd
been there this past year and a half during all of this. By the way, Kevin Kugler, I saw Richard Deitch tweet out that he's going to be teamed up with Chris Spielman, I guess will be his color analyst, and Laura Ockman will be on the sidelines. And also quickly on the way out, Indy 500 ratings, no fans in the stands at the Brickyard, lowest ratings ever.
Oh, bummer.
Ever.
Well, it didn't help. They were going up against a NASCAR race, too.
Well, it was a weird time. I mean, it's always been the first weekend in May, right? I mean, Memorial Day weekend, excuse me, at the end of May. And this year was in August, so I'm sure that didn't probably help either. Okay, that'll do it for today. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your day. Be safe, because we want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.